Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Project U Radio. Frankie Metro. I have no idea what's going on here. I don't know what the show is about. I have no idea who's on the switchboard or any of that stuff. But the show started, so here we are. Got area code 510 on the line, as well as an area code 724. Yeah.
Hi. Hello. Frankie, can you hear me? This is Lynn. How are you?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Hi, I think we were both dialing in at the same time. I'm not sure. I'm sorry about that. So I called back as with the guest number. We actually had talked about doing a show about Bukowski tonight, but then, you know, we realized that it was International Women's Day and International Women's Month, and so I guess we thought, you know what, maybe a little bit of estrogen, read a couple of things by some females tonight was sort of the plan. That's what we had posted, so I don't know if you're cool with that or,
That's definitely cool with me, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's, you know, I think that I kind of dropped the ball with even realizing that it was International Women's Day. I mean, I didn't, you know, really give it a whole lot of thought as far as connecting it to, you know, poetry and small press and, you know, but that is something that, as you know, I've mentioned, you know, here and there, you know. That, you know, I would like to see, you know, a little more attention to the ladies, a little more involvement from the ladies. And, you know, there are various reasons why or why not, you know, as far as seeing that. I don't know if we want to speculate a little bit about that. But, yeah, so that was sort of the idea. I mean, I hope that's cool. So, and hello, Paul.
Hello, yes, 510. 510 is the Oakland area code, or Alameda County, as it were. But yeah, I remember, I didn't even know about International Women's Day until, I didn't know it existed until I worked for the New College of California out in the Mission, and they had it as a regular holiday. And, you know, and it's always, you know, it always comes in the middle of the week. It's always, you know, sort of an odd, today it's a Thursday. I always remember it being on a Wednesday or a Tuesday. And just kind of like it was this odd day off in the middle of the week, and students would show up or teachers would show up to teach their class and go, hey, wait a minute, where's our, like, nope, the whole place closed down for the day, and it's and no other business or establishment would be closed that day, but we would for International Women's Day. I enjoyed that tradition, let me tell you. But, and it's kind of, I think it's, you know, a little. And it's fair to say, it's like, well, shouldn't every day be International Women's Day, you know, to some degree, or at least maybe half the day, since they do represent half the population and citizenry of the world. You know, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird that half the population is represented by one day a year.
Well, I don't know that it's represented by one day. I mean, I think that it's, you know, people have mixed feelings about this idea of setting aside a day or having a month, you know, Black History Month or Women's Month or Breast Cancer Month. I mean, people say, well, shouldn't we care about it, you know, 24/7 every day of the year? And I mean, obviously that's true, but I think that the idea behind it, at least my thinking, is that, you know, maybe it's a day to kind of take pause a little bit and, you know, take a look at the fact that, you know, there is still inequality. And, you know, as you can see in the primaries and you know, the pretty disgraceful things that are going on, I mean, in my opinion, you know, around issues. I mean, we're still fighting about the right to birth control. We're still fighting about these things, you know. Every time we, you know, we stop being vigilant, it seems that we backslide, and there are people that would like to bring us, you know, to the Stone Age.
Oh, yeah, women's reproductive rights are falling like flies right now. It's kind of scary, actually.
Right.
What's happened in Oklahoma? What's happened in Virginia? In terms of, you know, in Oklahoma, you know, the Oklahoma Senate has struck again by saying, you know, that life begins at the heartbeat. And again, it's like, regardless, and this is, you know, you and no matter what the risk to the mother, you know, they're going to do everything they can to get that fetus out, and they're bound and determined, even if it, you know, even if it kills the mother. Does, you know, that's it's disgusting what's happening, in my opinion.
Well, you know, not wanting to be, you know, too political here. I mean, you know, I say what I always say. I wish we could be pro women, pro child, you know, not just before they're born, but when they're actually in the world, and, you know, maybe give some thought to what we're doing to the, you know, the planet.
No. Once they come out of the womb, they have to be subjected to the harsh realities of the free market.
Yeah,
and
that's how
we build good
Americans.
Jack them
up on toxins.
Absolutely.
Their future with debt. I mean,
administer
that
epidural at birth so that they're tied right. So the first greeting into the world is from the pharmaceutical companies. Thank you, pharmaceutical companies. Every kid gets an epidural on its way out, and make sure we have a long generation of full generation of kids that are happy, only too happy to go to the prescription doctor for their needs. To fix them every time, but anyway, you're right. It's a culture of death instead of a culture of life, and I've, you know, been believing that for a long time. But what are you going to do? You have to keep fighting it the best you can. But let's not be a drag. Let's not be a downer. Let's not be hard. You know, we are supposed to be celebrating. We should celebrate a little bit. And I'm even celebrating right now with a nice beer.
Right with a nice beer. What about you, Frankie? What are you drinking tonight?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to tell us.
It's a lot of stuff. Started with some hash, and I don't know where it's at right now, to be honest with you.
Oh, my goodness. He's got a buffet, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel, as far as women, you know, I know that I mean, some of it's joking around. I mean, but seriously, I mean, I do feel that that women tend to be underrepresented. And when you sort of get into some of the reasons for that, I mean, people on both sides will say, well, you know what, it's not that we don't include women, or, you know, it's just that, hey, this is the way it is. We get 80%. Submissions from men, and we just don't get as many from women. We have open mics, and we get a lot of guys, and we don't have as many females. And I think that's changed. I mean, I don't think that's really as true as maybe it was. Or, and I think it maybe depends on which scene you're talking about. But I mean, do you think that's kind of true, Frankie, or you don't really see that?
In all honesty, I think that there's a great huge separation right now in the poetry community between females and aliens, and I think the females are scared of the aliens, and they're not coming to the open mics, and they're not participating. Yeah. No, I'm seriously though, like, in all honesty, like, I have to say that, like, I don't see as much participation. And, for instance, Red Fez, there's not as much participation as far as female writers as there are male writers there. Thankfully, things are changing around. I think the trend is, like, as of late, is leaning a little bit stronger towards the female side, and I'm appreciating seeing a lot of major book deals coming out with great female authors, like, you know, Maria Gornell, who we talked about, like, 1 week ago. And,
right.
You know, it's happening. It's just happening at a very slow pace. And, you know, hopefully we can either be patient or we could start cranking out some more estrogen. That's the way I look at it.
Right. And I think also letting, you know, reaching out to one another. I mean, I think that we can, you know, with all of these issues, we can point fingers and we could say, well, it's patriarchy. Well, it's the, you know, it's the boys club. It's all of these things. But I think to a certain extent, women have to kind of reach out to their own, you know, that whole sisterhood thing. For some reason, I think part of it, you know, in some cases is, you know, maybe women have to get a little bit better about being more supportive of one another, you know, you know, I'm not saying all women are competitive and catty, and I'm not attributing those things to all women. But, you know, I think it doesn't hurt, you know, for us to maybe go out of our way a little bit and say, you know what, you know, maybe invite more of, you know, more of the females that you know to submit to your publications and your magazines and, you know, do some
of
that.
I'll go on record and say that one of my most favorite people in the small press world right now is female, and that's Miss Michelle McDaniel.
Right, me too.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
We're not going to...
Michelle, I hope she's out there listening right now.
Yeah, yeah. You hear it, Michelle. We're going to inflate your ego a little bit, but... I did want to mention that the number to call in, of course, is 805-856-2808. And we do have two callers on the line, actually. We have a 614 and a 701. Should we bring one of these guys in and see what they have?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and, you know, this is, you know, I think that also just to point out, I mean, you know, you can read something by a female, inspired by a female, but you don't have to be female, obviously, to call in. I mean, you don't have to be female to talk about these issues. I mean, you know, these are things that everyone on all sides, you know, can weigh in on and say something about. So, you know, it's open like it always is. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that it's, you know, I mean,
whatever,
I'm outnumbered right now.
You're a sexist and everybody knows it. We're going to find out if 614 is a sexist or not. 614, are you?
Yes, hello. Okay.
Hello, hello.
I hope I'm not a sexist, but I did prepare from the Facebook announcement. I did prepare to read something by, I think, is a female. Awesome.
Yeah.
Is that all right? Yeah.
Yes, it is. First off, can we hear what your name is?
My name is Nathan Moore.
Oh, hey, Nathan.
Hey, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
I have to call in because my computer has no sound, so I have to call in and listen to the show. And so my computer has no sound, so I hope it doesn't look like I'm on the line, you know, like, when he's to talk the whole time.
Well, we like to put people on the spot, too, so...
Yeah, so I'm not like
most of us are on the phone too. It's okay. It really is.
Yeah, you're good.
All right. Not like waiting to talk the whole time. Don't get the impression that I'm like itching to talk this through the entire show. I'm just on the phone because my computer has no sound.
You're itching to talk. You're dying to talk. You know.
I am. I'm dying right now. And also, I'm underground. I'm 6 feet underground right now. And I've set the decorative cabbages on fire in the front yard. Don't worry about that. Yeah. This is, can I read a piece by Diane Williams? Is that all right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. This is by Diane Williams. It's called Highlights of the Twilight. This is from... a magazine called Agriculture Reader, and it's number 3. It's a great magazine. I picked it up a long time, a couple of years ago. I think it's from 2009. So, Highlights of the Twilight by Diane Williams. The clerk reminded me of my dead husband, who used to say he was always going around all the time with his penis sticking out and that he didn't know what to do. Lady, the clerk said. A little old lady, a glitter, jerked herself toward that clerk. A motley group of us was looking at a wristwatch, and inwardly I'd prayed I'd see a glow of dancing matter to lead me. I am another little old lady, gaily forward toward my death. Mrs. Cook, a person said, are you here to have some fun? This is a shop with a bird on a branch in diamonds and pearls, a snake with sapphire on its brow, a ram's head, a griffin, a sailfish, a bracelet, a bog oak, heavy electric lighting, wall sockets, a city of the gods. I'll be entirely discounted, another clerk said. Is there anything else I can show you? I find it so difficult to believe, if I understand you correctly, is that all you want? They offered me a cut-out flower motif ring. They told me to take proper care of fine jewelry, to be sure to have the drain plugged before I cleaned it, I said, I can't afford it. I can't afford it. But we'll have that one. You've broken it. You've ruined it, the clerk said. Don't look so awful, I said, as I made my move to fall all over him as if to invite him to my hellhole. And that was Diane Williams from Agriculture Reader.
That's cool. Thank you.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I mean, that was a good choice. I mean, I'm always curious, you know, what makes people sort of decide to kind of read one thing or another, and, you know, I mean, I don't know, like, you want to say anything about it, or you want to,
I don't know.
I mean, we're free-flowing.
It was like either that, or I have some Alice Notley lined up, you know, I was like, I don't know, Alice Notley or that, and I was like, well, I don't know. This kind of seemed like it jumped out at me, like it was crazy. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And just the beautiful thing that she made. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right.
I thought
no.
I'd share it.
We appreciate that. It's great when you call. You know, it's always good to hear from you. You know, whether you're on the line listening or you're talking,
I mean,
you're always welcome.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. I have to listen on my phone. I have to.
I've had to do that myself. Yeah. No, that's cool. I mean, you can, I don't know if you, we could just kind of leave you on if you want, and you can chime in if the urge.
I don't have to talk, but I would like to listen. So, yeah.
All right. No, cool. No, thank you. I think I know who this is, but I will. What do you think, Frankie? Should we pick up 701?
Yeah, I guess. Go ahead and bring him on.
You guess? You think so?
Yeah. It's like you know who it is already, Frankie.
I got a feeling his name starts with Frank Reardon.
No, I hope so. That's cool. I think you should be on, Frank.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. I can never understand Franklin Metro.
He's like an enigma. You mean you literally can't understand him, or you mean you don't understand him as like a being?
He sounds like he's in a giant tin box right now.
Maybe he is. Maybe he's in a bunker, and
case of emotion.
Yeah, he's interacting from a giant one of those doomsday vaults, you know, where people go when they're like afraid of the apocalypse. You know, they go in there and
they have a lot
of
those in New Mexico. I think they have a lot of those in New Mexico.
You think they do? Why do you speculate that there are more there than other places? Are they more afraid? Are they more in touch with the Mayans?
Not necessarily. I think there's a lot of old military bunkers that need to be squatted properly by the local free populace down there.
Maybe that's where all the undisclosed locations are that the politicians are always going to when, like, shit hits the fan, you know?
Yeah. They had Bush there for a while during 9/11.
You think? How
did we get off the subject? We got off the subject here.
We're supposed to be talking about women, damn it.
Okay, then ask me a question about women, and maybe we'll get back into women.
I would, you know what, Frank? I would still love to ask a
question
about women.
I think it's a fantastic subject myself.
Okay.
Frank, do you think that women are, your perception, do you feel that there is some inequity as far as representation of, like, female poets versus male, or do you think it's sort of one of those things where, like, the more we make an issue out of it, maybe we shouldn't even, you know, maybe we should just let it go?
I think you should let it go, because I just think that a lot of times men tend to be, I don't know, more pompous and outspoken. Push them into, like, I know plenty of great ones. There's, like, you know, there's April Bratton, and there's Iris Applequist, and Vivian Hess, and there's just, like, a lot. Dale Winslow, there's a lot of good female writers out there. They just are not as outspoken and foolish as some of the men are out there, including myself.
There's that, too.
So, well, do you think they should be? I mean, do you think part of keeping, you know, poetry a vibrant part of culture is to, I think, to a certain extent, get out there and kind of bang the drum about it and say, you know what, this is here. And, you know, whether you're male or female, I think it's, I'm not saying you have to do that, but, you know, to kind of, do you think the burden is on us to keep it kind of relevant? And I don't know.
What burden for poetry to make it relevant?
Do you think of it that we should be doing more of that, you know, getting out there and, you know, putting ourselves out there, our work out there, other people's work out there?
I don't know. I mean, I do. It's hard enough doing it myself, but, you know, I try to promote those that I like, too, that I'm out and about there with. But majority of people don't give a shit if you're banging some poetry drum or something like that. They just don't care. They don't care if you're banging a prose drum. They want what's force-fed to them, like, for poetry, people want it to be Billy Collins, and for literature, they want it to be James Patterson, and that sucks. But that's just, like, the way it is. But I heard an interesting concept recently that a well-known poet had said that, like, he said that poetry is more popular now than it was in the 50s because of mainly the internet. It doesn't seem that way because we don't have any of the quote-unquote superstars at the moment, but more people buy and write it than they used to. So I don't know who that's, you know, who you give that over to, but I kind of think that's interesting.
Yeah, well, I think the internet makes, I think you also have a way of finding your community. I mean, I think it used to be that, you know, if you lived in like a small town somewhere and there weren't a lot of people that shared your interests maybe, or there wasn't, you know, what you would call a scene, a poetry scene in your community. I mean, I think the internet makes it so that you can kind of find your own to a certain extent and people that you can, you know, coordinate things with, do readings, you know, whatever it is that you want to set up. I mean, you know, even this whole, you know, I guess, Red Fez meetup that we had in Chicago, I mean, all of us, I mean, it wouldn't have been possible, you know, if we didn't have the internet to sort of get us all together. And, you know, so I think that's
I would never
useful.
I would never have, like, my books published and the books coming out if it wasn't for some of the people that I met on the internet, because, you know, my publisher's out of Vancouver. Like, I would have never have, like, known that because I was living in Boston. You know, I would have never said, I think I'll take a trip to Vancouver and see if I can find myself a publisher. But the internet made that possible. You know, so, you know, but once you make those connections on the internet, then, like, it helps you to make the connections in the actual world, you know. Like, S.A. Griffin got me readings in L.A., and I did them, and I met people there that I would have never have met on the internet, you know, because not everybody uses that tool. So, but as for women, I think that the ones that I know, like, are just extremely more laid back. Like, let the men make fools of themselves, and then we'll come about. I mean, that's kind of like how I see it with most things, you know. So I'm going to read one, and then we can get on. But it's one of April's poems. Called Marriage. We married in broad daylight in front of the looking trees and under the watchful sun and right next to the baby purple flowers that seemed to open their heads. And in the eye line of everyone else, all dressed in black with big dramatic hats, we married. And then we drank too much at the reception, wherein I locked myself in the bathroom like a prisoner in black and white stripes, like an infant butterfly without a cocoon. And when you coaxed me out, we fucked on the white bed, my lace knitted lingerie wrinkled in despair, while you held my knees above my head, and you said you were so glad I was your wife. Then you dug your nails in deep into my meaty thighs, and I cried from what I said was only a flesh wound, but really, it was much more than that. That's the end.
Yeah, no, that's...
Nice.
That she's bold. See, like, yeah, she, you know, she's, like, her, from my perception of her is, you know, is kind of quiet, but, you know, she's, her writing is bold, you know, she's, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, she's quiet. She wants to get out there just as much as anybody else, but, you know, us being stuck where we are, it's a little bit harder. She's a little bit more shy than I am, but it's a bit harder because she doesn't get the opportunity to go to these readings. But, you know, spending a year in New England before we go to California, there's much more opportunity in New England to network. And then in California, of course, there is. But, you know, she's just more shy than I am. But, you know, once she's with everybody else, she reads just fine, you know, talkative like anybody else. But that's how it goes. Like, I don't know, it's, what did George Carlin say about men? I can't remember what he said. Something like, we always got like a dick to prove or something like that. And
yeah.
Honestly, like, believe in all that. Like, you know, it's, I think it's kind of that way. I mean, if you bring it down to the basics of what it is and like creation of men and women, men and women, well, not creation like biblically, but like, you know, when we came about, like, men were just always that way. And I'm not trying to like label it sexist or anything. It's just how it is, just how men are. I mean, I do know some women that are outspoken, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the majority of the ones I know, poetry or not, are just have always been laid back as opposed to men. You know, call it a testosterone thing. I don't know. Call it a Paul Coleman Robert Shorts thing. You know, I don't know.
Well, I think April would be, you know, it'd be cool to hang out with her sometime and maybe, you know, who knows, maybe we'll.
She did an interview online that was a really good one. She was interviewed by Andrew Lopez. It was like a year or two ago. I probably could find it if anybody was interested. It was a pretty good, cool interview. She's a very into like the Carson McCullers and stuff like that. So she has a different aspect and take on things. It's rather interesting. And her website's pretty cool. The Up the Staircase, you know, she edits that, and it's a pretty cool magazine for online. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's I think it's a representative. I mean, it's funny because I think when we talk about women being underrepresented in the small press, I think it's that portion of the small press that calls itself underground or consciously calls itself underground, too, because that group is really more, you see that in the beat community, because in a lot of ways I feel that self-proclaimed underground group is very much a natural growth or a progression from the beat community, who obviously saw themselves that way, and they were, you didn't see a lot of women in the beat scene either, but when you look at the overall small press, the independent small press and even the academic small press, I do think you see better representation with women. I guess so. It kind of speaks to what you said about them being more laid back, but just more, you know, more sophisticated, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, it's you don't see a lot of female poets out there as pure, in-your-face, rock and roll type poets, although there definitely are a few out there, and there's a few of them that are very, very good at it. But that's, you know, you see the guys trying to do that sort of thing a little bit more often. You know, maybe the peacock thing with the strutting and the posturing and therefore the need to have this identification with something as underground.
Maybe, but if you were to think back to the Beats, I mean, look at what someone like Diane DePrima went through. I mean,
right,
you know,
Diane,
as a mother.
And
I mean, don't.
Sure.
When
well,
you
yeah.
Start, and when you start to, you know, commingle persona and lifestyle with being a poet, I mean, I think to a certain extent, I mean, I'm not at all saying that because you're a mother, you can't. You know, you can't do, I mean, there's nothing that you can't do. I wouldn't say you're limited, but, you know, if you're really trying to participate in a scene and spending, you know, weekends getting home at 6 a.m. because you're hanging out, hanging out in the village all night. I mean, I would imagine, and I know that she has written about this, that it is difficult. It is difficult when you throw into the mix. I mean, you can think of all kinds of female poets that had sort of a difficult time with the fact that they were also juggling parenting. And I'm not saying that that's not true for men also, you know, because then you know, Paul, that it's definitely true. I mean, and one of the things I absolutely respect about you is you know how difficult it is. But, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a tendency for women to think, well, there's this expectation of me that I can't go and, you know, I can't go and do those things, you know.
Well, you look at the time of the Beats, too. It was a lot more, women were much more hemmed in and much more had a much more defined role without a lot of options in that time. You know, and it was.
I mean,
she
had something like five kids, right? I mean, you know, I think she had five kids.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really to her credit that she continued forward. But I mean, maybe it was her writing which discouraged a lot of other females from taking the same road. You know, I mean, there was Ruth Weiss, sure, Joanna McClure. You definitely have some. you know, some female voices coming through in that. But, you know, beyond that, there aren't many. It's you know, you look at the number of the male to female ratio is pretty lopsided when you get right down to it. And I mean, part of that, you know, and that's because part of the beat thing is, you know, then it can be held down by material obligations and things like that, one of which of raising a kid actually is. And it's a lot easier for a guy to just, especially then, especially in that time, when they had this romantic thing that they were supposed to go find their dharma out on the fucking road, it doesn't lend itself well to raising the kids. And so, yes, I think it's unfortunate, but a natural sort of chain of events that the, you know, the female beat poets got stuck doing a lot of dirty work, or were expected to do dirty work, and that extended into the whole hippie age, when, you know, pretty soon it's, you know, the granola and the organic food was still being prepped by all the women in the kitchen while all the guys sat around supposedly figuring out a revolution or something, which, you know, was just really an excuse to get blasted. So I think people get tired of repeating those same patterns again and again, and I do think we've made some progress since then. But I think it's something that you see primarily in sort of the underground online community, where there's, you know, you have these sort of gathering weenie roasts, but then you do have area, you know, you do have some places that are, you know, strong when it comes to female representation. Like, I know out in California, we have Kelsey Street Press. We, you know, there's Three Fingers Press. You know, these are women, and of course, what's her name from Pank Magazine, Roxanne, has got, you know, Tiny Hardcore Press, which right now, as it stands, is all female. Although I guess some people don't call that poetry, that's fiction. But it's still the independent small press, a lot of which is fueled by online, you know, periodicals and whatnot. So, but I don't know, and it's always so necessarily underrepresented. I think it's a little more segregated than we like to look at sometimes. I think there's quite a bit of segregation between male and female in the independent internet small press.
Yeah, but that time at the Beats when, you know, I think there was, when you had like Kerouac, Ginsberg, and Burroughs, those were like the three biggest rock stars of the time. I don't think there was a man that was going to outrun them in popularity at the time, never mind a woman. And I've never, like, you know, you can shit on me all you want, but I've never been a big fan of Diane de Prima anyways. But I tell you who I did like, not from necessarily that era, but a little before that, was Anais Nin was a spectacular writer.
Yep.
She's probably one of the better ones past 100 years. Carson McCullers is freaking fantastic. You know, of course, like, you know,
and,
if you can get past a little
Anne
bit of
Sexton, don't forget Anne Sexton. Anne Sexton,
oh, yeah,
a brilliant poet from that time.
Yeah, she was like buried mm-hmm. behind my house. I've been to her grave like a million times. But
is that where you're getting a little mojo off of that, are you?
dude, that same cemetery was Anne Sexton, E.E. Cummings, and Eugene O'Neill were all buried in the same cemetery. It's pretty wild.
Nice.
But
toast into that.
I always got bad vibes when I went to like Anne Sexton's grave. Like insanity, bad vibes. I didn't like it there.
Interesting. She went out kind of hard.
Yeah, she was excellent too. I mean, but you know, and then if you get past like after a while, sometimes like you know, Sylvia Plath was great, but after a while, like sometimes I feel like slapping the emo out of her like once in a while. But you know, she had some really like hardcore stuff. I think she blew away Ted Hughes as a writer. I mean, I've never been a Ted Hughes fan, anyways. But you know, but once you get past those, like you know, big 10 or 12 of the past like century, I mean, I don't even really know that many, like, you know, outside of the small press, the ones that I've met in the small press, like ones that are like, you know, renowned, like Anne Sexton or Anais Nin and stuff. I can't think of that many, you know, 1900 and after.
Yeah. I mean, some of the best ones out. Yeah. And after that, well, yeah, it's, you know, they're, I mean, you know, the great American mother of the mother of American poetry, Emily Dickinson, was you know, kind of gets poo-pooed as old school, but you know, she really was brilliant. She really was subversive, and had you know, and really I think sets a great template. I think maybe even better than Whitman in terms of an American poetic tradition. It's just that, you know, the credit doesn't always.
I completely forgot about Edna St. Vincent Millay, like, she's...
Edna St. Vincent, yeah, absolutely.
And April's really into, I haven't really met her, read her much, the Mia Loy, I think her name is. She was hanging around with all those, you know, William Carlos Williams guys and all those guys in that time of writing in the 20s. She's really, like, crazy good or something, I suppose, but I haven't really read her to give a thumbs up yet. But it's April's favorite writer, and she knows good writing, so it must be pretty decent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I whenever I've done these readings in like Kansas City or L.A. or places wherever, yeah, there's a, pretty much an equal amount of male and female writers like that at these small pressings that I've been to. Most of them, the majority of them, but outstanding. I think my cousin's really good too. When she puts her mind to wanting to do it, like, you know, she can be really good too. And Justine Middleton's good, and Amelie Florence is good, and there's a good amount of them.
I can't deny that there aren't a lot of them out there. You go out, there's a lot of poets. There are, I mean, it's true. There are, I mean, poetry is really happening, and I think by association, there are more female poets to be experienced than ever before, and that's got to be a good thing.
It's happening everywhere, and I think the internet's a good thing. I mean, it's drier in other places, like West Coast is good, the Northeast is good, some places in the Midwest are good. I haven't really found that many in the Deep South that are really that good. And then again, I haven't looked around as much, like outside of like Alabama too much. But it's definitely happened on the East and West Coast. I guess that's always been happening in those places. But, you know, the internet has definitely connected all of us together to where Paul Coleman Roberts could say, I'm having a Short Shorts major poetry event. Who's coming? And, you know, if you tell me 6 months in advance, shit, I'll be coming if there's, like, a bunch of people there, like, you know. And
I was going to say, how about 4 months in advance? We're looking at July 7th, so I'm just going to put that out there to you. That's we're doing, hopefully, I mean, I don't know for sure that we're doing a Zyfez thing, but it's possible we will. And hopefully it'll be around July 7th, because we're having our own literary crawl here in the East Bay. I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of a literary crawl, but basically you get a gazillion readings going at one over a period of 3 or 4 hours.
Oh yeah.
You know, they have one in San Francisco every year. They have the one in New York, and it's, you know, and it's in Lake. So that's something we're talking about. And of course, and there will be lots of females represented. We just got this place called the Fillmore Adult Gallery, and one of my favorite female poets out here, Jezebel Delilah X, is going to host the erotic reading, which we'll have as part of the
call.
That's
awesome. She's cool. I'd love to see her.
Yeah,
I mean,
she brings it, man.
I've read her
stuff,
and I'd love to see her. Yeah, I mean, Full of Crow is doing a reading. If I'm not mistaken, Paul,
Full of Crow is set to curate on the Beast Crawl, and possibly a Chapek party, depending on who we can get into, who we can have in town for that. But
it's up in the air a little bit.
It's still just coming together. It's still just coming together, but you know that it is something to be on the lookout for, and we will have a hell of a mix, no question.
We're still trying to put the two-day reading together in Boston that we're going to do. That should have been happening like right now, but you know I got backtracked and got stuck here, so it didn't happen. And my cousin and I were putting it together. Well, when I get to New England for a year, we're going to try to probably do it next spring or. Like in a year, obviously. But we had it set up for like 2 days. We were getting the events like all around Boston. We had like 150 people that wanted to come around the country and do it. So, I mean, hell, why not? It's going to cost us like a couple $100 to get the venues, but I think like the payoff will be way better anyways. Like, so, you know, we'll probably be looking to do that still. And, you know, sometimes it's just nice to have everybody come to you for once.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, Aaron drove out to Toledo with, you know, the whole Massachusetts crew. I mean, you know, Dan and everybody. I mean, they came far. I don't know if that's like 12 hours or more, but... Yeah, I know she came all
the way out to Toledo.
The Kansas City crew
had quite a haul too.
Yeah, it was cool that they were able to come out. But yeah, that's the thing is you have to sort of, you know, try to, I guess, get people in all different areas as much as you can, you know, spread it out a little bit. I mean, everything can't be in, you know, California or New York. I mean, you know, we have to look at spreading things out,
well,
too. But,
a lot
you know.
Of the stuff's in the Midwest, though. Like, in the Midwest, like, it can be, like, taxing when you have to buy all the plane tickets all the time. So sometimes it's just nice that I don't come out. But I don't know. I think when I'm in New England for a year, I think I'm going to stretch it around, like, New England, New York City, and maybe Pennsylvania, and as far out as Ohio. But I can't be, like, I don't know. It's a lot of fucking money now, like, especially with the gas prices. You can't even take an Amtrak for a good price anymore. Amtrak costs as much as a damn plane now.
Yeah, it does.
And then there's the J.D. Nelson approach, which is to take it on the Greyhound, baby. But even that's not cheap anymore.
The Greyhound sucks, man. Like, I rode a Greyhound for 5 years straight, dude. I'll never.
I know. I had my time. I've done plenty of Greyhound in my life.
Yeah,
you don't mind it taking 6 days to get to where you're going.
Hey,
yeah,
like, one or
yeah.
2 months.
Little
period,
things
I
like that.
Like, and it's like 1 or 2 or 3 month period. I went like 8,000 miles on a Greyhound, like all these like back and forth to all these cities. I haven't driven one in 3 years, and I don't plan on one again, if at all possible. It's just like a terrible experience. Like, the Greyhound bus drivers suck. You never get to your fucking connection on time, so you're always hauling ass, like, somewhere in the middle of Cincinnati at 3 in the morning to get on your bus, and there's always, like, crackheads on the bus, and it's just fucking awful. It was cool at one time, but after a while, it's like, damn, man, I don't want to sit, like, next to this 800-pound guy that smells like
When you're young and the world's your oyster, it's romantic. When you're, you know, when you're starting to get older and change your life priorities, it loses its romantic value in a hurry.
Yeah, it's just much better to drive a car. If you're going to drive a car, because you can smoke or take a leak whenever you want.
That's right.
Something to be said
for
that.
What happened to Metro?
Is he still there? Frankie, is still there? We lost him.
He's gone,
Frankie's
man.
Taking a nap, man.
Yeah, I think he sounded tired. He was on the crunk. That was his quote of his. He was crunked. When you're crunked, you're in bad shape. That was
well,
that.
Was
but yeah, but there is a chance. There's a chance that Zyfez could be in Albuquerque too. And Albuquerque is, you know, not all the way across the country from any, you know, it's like, you know, it's kind of one of those middle points and stuff. There's always a possibility. There he is.
Woo!
Crock.
Hi.
Young guy.
This is why I say Albuquerque. Hello.
There he is. What's wrong with you? Are you okay, man?
God damn, dude. I got such a hangover right now.
You're sloppy, dude. You're sloppy.
Yeah, a little sloppy.
I heard. I think it was Lynn who said his sloppy's better for an Estrofest anyway.
Yeah.
Although this isn't much of an Estrofest. Even here, we have three guys and one woman on the line here on International Women's Day.
You know,
where's Brian
Boucher?
That's my wife, Paul.
I know. Brian was up to estrogen level here a little bit. I'm like a lesbian with an unfortunate genetic mutation. That's what I am.
Yeah, but Paul, it's like it's everywhere. It's honestly, I mean, I'm not trying to like whine or anything. You know, it's cool, but it's like it's everywhere. I mean, everything that I do. I mean, you know, it's like a group of guys, and then there's like me. It's like, you know what I mean? You know, it's a little disheartening. You know,
maybe it's because guys really just don't have as much of a life. You know, and so we just show up for these things. You know, that's the Woody Allen quote. Life, 80% of life. Is just showing up, and you know we're the ones who show up.
We're the showers. We're not the growers. We're the showers.
you're not the growers.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have more growers.
Yeah. We're not the growers.
Growing is good, and I'm not just talking about growing. You know. That Mexican style of yours down there, border way.
Sorry.
Brian Fouzet just IM'd me and called me a pussy and said he's listening.
Guys, Frank is still on here.
Freddy Krueger's still on here.
He won't get out.
All right, we like Brian.
We like Brian, and if he's listening, you know, he's, yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
Brian,
you know,
we have to get Brian high again. That's the thing, is we have to get Brian high again.
Brian is dancing around in women's underwear to All the Pretty Horses, and he rubs lotion.
He's wearing his Depends.
I'd fuck me good. All right, I'm quoting Silence in the Land.
That was frighteningly good there, sir.
He's, you know what, he's all talk. I mean, even when we were out in Chicago, you know what, he didn't end up putting on those Depends. You know, he had them, and he, you know, we were expecting it, but I don't think he delivers. I think he's a tease. That's my take on him. I think he's a tease.
Did he bring the hamster?
No, he didn't bring the hamster. No, he didn't. Not the, well, maybe
no
I
balls.
Don't remember. I mean, you got to realize.
Maybe Brian Fouché is the next great female poet.
He could be. He could be. You know what?
He said he was going to send something in for the next anger management event.
Yeah, but he's a tease. That's why. I'm calling you out. I'm calling you
right,
out, Brian.
You really are. Man, I'm disillusioned. I'm kind of, I sat here and I, you know, I believed Brian, and you've changed my mind. You've put doubt in my mind, Lynn, about Brian. Now I feel like I've been played. Brian, you bitch.
He's a total bitch, man. He's so afraid to call in.
I think we lost Frankie, and I'm not sure what the status is once that happens, because
Frankie's floating in and out.
On Tim Murray's show, we just had to all hang up after hours since he was gone and had to shut the show off.
We were stuck, right? I'm picking up 937, whoever you are, but I have to tell you, 937, that we're not sure what's going on, because I think we lost Frankie, and I think he's like under a table somewhere.
So
who's 937? It's the ghost
Hello.
Of Sylvia Plath. Hello.
or Ann Sexton.
Right. Yeah, she's coming to complain about the creepy vibe on her grave. She's Hello? She's like, I'll fix that bitch.
I hear
talking
someone.
About my grave.
I know. I hear
a
little voice in the background. Who? Hello?
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 It's Brianna Fouché.
It is Brianna, you bastard. You're talking shit.
Yes, we are.
You want to know why the Depends undergarments did not happen that night? It's because we
yes,
were distracted by Frankie
why.
Metro. Everyone like in a panic. You know what? Frankie wouldn't even have made it to the show or to that house that night if I hadn't put on my Facebook and saw his message saying, "Hey, we're at the airport. Somebody pick us up." And we were like right in the middle of the Red Fez Talk radio show, and I said, "Holy crap! Frankie and Lindsay are at the airport." So, you know, we're all in a panic, like, oh, my God, somebody has to go get them. And, you know, I was all set to do the undergarments, man. So I'll wear undergarments at the next Zyfez live. Where's all the estrogen here tonight?
You heard it here first, folks.
Here we go. It's like, you know, you were right, Lynn. It's you and a whole bunch of guys. And
what else is new? What else is new? I mean,
yeah,
seriously.
Nothing changes.
Where's your army of women here? Where's your estrogen?
You know what? I don't know.
Warriors.
It's like I've been... Yeah, where are my sisters? I don't know. Where's Michelle? I mean, it's... Yeah, I mean... But, you know, what else is new? I mean, this is like... My entire life is like that. I mean, it's always been like that. Even when I was a kid, it was like that. So, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. Women hate me. I don't know.
Yeah, you fit in really well with the guys, though. That's the thing. You can hang... You're the only one of the few other people besides Paul Corman Roberts and maybe John Swain that one night last time. Who can hang with me all night till 9 in the morning?
You know what? John Swain did it way better than I did. I'll give that guy credit. He not only hung with you, but he outdid me. I mean,
even though he was going a little insane at the end there, but
yeah, he's like nobody I've ever experienced at like 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah,
that was like a Jekyll and Hyde episode. Because when we hung out with him in Cleveland, like back in November, he was a totally different person. He was so shy and quiet.
Reserved,
I know. So anyhow.
Yeah, see, now we know. Now we have higher expectations of him.
Exactly. It's like anything less is going to be a letdown. But
right.
He was off the charts, I got to tell you. It was fun, though. It was so much fun. But,
I know, and yet he shows up in his, like, you know, in his, like, yuppie thing.
Oh, yeah,
and,
I know.
You
would never guess. To look at him, he's, like, all clean cut and all yuppies, and, like, but, boy, man, he was a wild man that night, writing his merman poems and stuff.
I know. He was hilarious. No, he's a good guy. I mean, but, yeah, I was surprised tonight. Yeah, yeah, there's a whole side of him that we really, you know, and I think we've only scratched the surface. I mean, I think he's out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say that. No, but I mean, I love that about him. But yeah, he is out there. I mean, you know, in a good way. In a good way. But yeah, I mean, what kind of estrogen fest? You know what? I will go on record as saying I have enough estrogen to go around. I'll just spread it around like fairy dust here, you know, and that's it. You know, that's cool.
I think Frank Riordan does too, but he's not willing to admit it. He tries to project it all upon me somehow with his homoerotic Aquaman references. But that's okay. That's Frank Riordan.
I hooked you up with that Liberace photo today.
Yeah, it looks pretty nice. I wish I could pull that off, that look with the Sergeant Pepper's jacket. But so anyhow, you guys are talking about estrogen, women, female poets, and all that. And, you know, I have a little input, you know, regarding submissions and all that. You know, I've been doing this for almost a decade now. And honestly,
right.
I just don't get as many female submissions.
You delete them.
No, I don't. No, that is not true. I even, like, the last couple issues have gone out of my way to contact female writers. If you look at the most current issue of Zygote Online, you'll see it's almost 50-50 with female-to-male writers in that issue, number 136 that's up right now. I had to go out of my way to do that. Now, I don't have the time to do that all the time. So, you know, like, I think,
it was a hardship.
Well, no, to go out of my way to get female writers to submit, you know. And I think Frank Riordan had a lot of good points, actually, you know. He was right when he was saying, you know, a lot of these female writers, you know, aren't as aggressive and, I guess, dumb at times as a lot of the male writers, because there's a lot of really good ones out there. But,
you're saying they're not as dumb, right? I just want to, you know, clarify.
Right. The female writers are more reserved and intelligent, and they know when to, pull their punches and just, you know, and then when to let it go. You know what I mean? Frank Riordan had a really good point that, you know, they're just better at conducting themselves, I guess. But that's,
except
that's
me.
Well, yeah, you're an exception. You're more like one of the guys, but I don't mean that in a bad way either. I mean that in a good way. It's not many chicks I can just hang out with like, you know, I do with you and just have like a total blast, you know. And but anyhow, no, really, female writers in the small press, you know, and even in the larger presses, they're just, I don't know what it is. There's not as many, and they're not as aggressive, you know.
What could we do about that? I mean, other than, I mean, you did the right thing. Well, some would say the right thing, trying to, like, actively recruit and, you know, take the time and trouble to sort of reach out and say, you know what, hey, why don't you send something in, you know, and you're, you know, your eggs are welcome over at Zygote. I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, but you know, and maybe that's something that has to be done. I mean, maybe that's one thing, but you know, I don't know that changes the culture of it, but
it doesn't. And then it shouldn't be that, you know, each editor of every magazine shouldn't have to do that. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just, maybe the ratio of female to male writers isn't this, you know, on, you know, the same kilter or whatever. I think they're just, there's more male writers out there. And they're, like Frank Riordan was saying, they're more brash about it, you know, about getting their stuff out there.
But do you think by the same token that, I mean, I know that I've made comments and I've made my jokes and I've said things. I mean, do you think that you open yourself up for criticism when people look at your site and they see, you know, like 90% men? I mean, do you think that it's sort of, you know, people come to you and say, hey, look, you're biased, you know, even though you're, I mean, clearly you're not. But, you know, do you think there's that criticism of editors when they don't have that?
Well, of course, yeah, but you know, they don't know the behind the scenes of it. So I'm sure some people have before. They've seen, wow, look, this is like a total sausage fest, you know, on Zygote. Screw this, you know, I'm not going to submit to them. And I think a lot of female writers might be also, on the same token, intimidated by the style of stuff we tend to publish in Zygote and Tan and Coffee Press. Honestly, a lot of the stuff's a little more out there, a little more, I guess, male oriented.
You think they're a little more prude?
Very possible. Not necessarily prude. I don't know if that's a good word to say. I mean, you know, given this is an estrogen fest, but I don't know.
Case by case basis.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's stylistically, as far as like the underground or the small brush or whatever you want to call it, a lot of the female writers don't have that more, I don't know, testosterone-laden style that a lot of the presses tend to like to publish. Maybe.
Well, I mean, there's just, you know, there's a certain style. Some publishers have a certain style that they're looking for, and it might be, you know, it might be brashly or expressly male, and you know, they
right.
might seek out a token female or two to be on their imprint or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another kind of publisher entirely that sits there and you know, considers a gender balance in
mm-hmm.
the catalog that they're going to offer. You know, it's not hard to do. It's not a, you know, and maybe you do have to go recruit a little bit. But you know, if you want to present that as a publisher, it's not, you know, you yourself said, you know, it's a little extra work for sure to do, and maybe you can't do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
yeah,
but
I think we have about 30 seconds. I think it's going to cut us off.
You can put I'll wrap, but just, you know, that's an effort you can put out. But, you know, and you know, and a lot of the sisters out there are self-organizing, too. I mean, it's if you look around, you can find it, or at least, I don't know, maybe that's the result of me being spoiled living out here in Nutty Fruity California, too. So maybe I'll need to come out to California.
Right, and I apologize because I'm not sure exactly what happens. It's like I'm looking at this countdown, and it's like 10 seconds, 9, and with Frankie disconnected, I'm not sure if it just cuts us off. I think that's what happens. So, good.